You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Screen Heroes. My name is Ray, and I am joined with two other hosts, my favorite lovely, handsome hosts, Ryan.
Hi.
And Derek.
Hello.
How are you guys tonight?
Good. I'm good. Feels good to be back, actually. I'm feeling good about this one.
I feel fine. I'm not really feeling back, though. Why do you feel back, Derek? Is it possibly because you had a big trip this weekend?
Yeah, we had a busy weekend, so it just kind of feels good to be back to our normal routine. That's all. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. That's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I had fluff in my pants.
Don't we all? Not all of us. No? Okay. Yeah. Just me, then?
He's a very hairy man. So let's dive into some news.
Sure.
Got the pleasantries out of the way. What's some crazy stuff that happened in the world of movies, TV, comics this week?
Shazam Gate. Nothing from Shazam.
No, there was actually
something
from Shazam. Yeah. I had a dream about Zachary Levi last night. And it was really weird because he thought I was like his biggest fan, but I've never seen Chuck, and so I felt like a phony. But I still wanted to hang out with him and stuff. It was a very weird dream, and
that
I don't know why.
Great update in Shazam.
But yeah, that's
maybe my favorite.
So let me piggyback off that for a moment. So over the weekend,
this water is tepid.
Tepid. Yes.
It's
well,
so
I didn't want
tepid.
It to be too cold or too hot.
You wanted it to be just right.
Right.
Go ahead.
Just like Goldilocks
first
and waters.
Yeah.
So over the weekend, one of the panels I did was, they call it Trailer Park, where they screen trailers and then talk about them with the audience and stuff like that. And we watched a handful of trailers. We got through like five of them. And the one that the people were absolutely by far the most excited for was Shazam.
Really?
That is a fun trailer.
Yeah.
This is the full trailer or a TV spot?
The full trailer. The first big one that they released. So we watched that, Aquaman, Venom, Bumblebee, and How to Train Your Dragon 3.
I think
those ones we got through.
It's just such a breath of fresh air, I think, is what makes it, you know, it's not a Marvel movie. It doesn't seem like the normal DC movies. It's just a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah. But it was just kind of cool to see people really positive about that. Everybody's like a big fan of Zachary Levi. Like, he just seems like a lovable guy. So, you know, just wanted to throw that out there.
Can't wait to hug him.
That would be cool. I would totally hug him if that was an option.
When are you hugging him?
Whenever he's ready.
Like, are you guys seeing him at some point? Or is this just another dream I'm having? I'm a fraud, but I want to hang out with him still.
Like, you can like him and not know Chuck. I mean, I would say that if you like him, you should watch Chuck, and you're welcome to borrow it.
I won't ever get around to it.
Know,
putting it in a DVD is a lot of work.
It really
if
is.
If I could stream it, then
Blu-rays.
I might do it. Right, if I could stream it, then I might go for it. But.
Okay, yeah. See, back when I started watching it, I had to get the discs from Netflix.
But it's not on Netflix now.
Those were dark times.
There are still people that use the discs.
Yeah,
it's like 20% of their user base or something.
No, I'm just kidding. Like, clearly, like, for those watching, we have a physical collection. So, anyway, so Swamp Thing, speaking of DC.
Yeah, a couple things.
Nice segue there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The guy was cast. The man in the practical costume is cast. I think his name is Derek Mears. And he's been in a few other horror films. They slap him in all kinds of prosthetics and big costumes.
So he's a good choice.
Exactly. He knows how to navigate the body. Very, very unlikely that he's going to do the voice. But at least, you know, we have acknowledgement that somebody's in there and
it's a practical suit.
It's a practical suit, so that's cool.
And this guy, like you said, he's done similar stuff before. He played one of the Predators in the Predators movie a few years back. He played Jason in the Friday the 13th reboot. He's played a lot of kind of physically overwhelming characters, you know, that type
physically
of thing.
Imposing, sure,
that's the word, thank you. Yeah, physically imposing characters. He played in Orion on an episode of Star Trek Enterprise, so just very physical characters.
It's not bad.
Yeah, this is not new to him, so I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, and then they also, we had, there was other Swamp Thing news. I think, didn't they come out and say that it was a hard R rating?
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Which, so they mean mature, because right. It's still TV, right? Okay.
Well, but it's on streaming service, so they, it's, yeah, you can do like what they did with Punisher, where it's, not, I mean, it doesn't have to meet a normal rating, it's mature, but it's a, you know, R would be the, what the rating is.
So I imagine the R is definitely going to be violence. And most likely we're going to get a decent amount of cussing.
Lots in of it. Plants on meat violence, I would assume.
Lots of Swamp Thing butt.
Maybe some. I assume he has a butt. I mean,
for
butt.
A hard R, I want to see Swamp Thing peen.
Like, well, no, the plants don't have peen. You want to see why a, would he have a statin, butt then? Statin or whatever it's called? The plant equivalent? I can't remember what it's...
Stamen.
Stamen, that's what it is, yeah. Or his pistol.
Well,
I think a pistol is another plant part.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. He fantastic. Probably has all of those plant parts throughout his body, and so he can mate with himself. And
yes.
I don't know if that's exactly how it works, but...
Can't believe it. Yeah, so hard R is interesting.
Derek really got
it,
him.
It really... It,
did Dave Grohl just join us in chat?
Yeah.
Yeah, we go way back.
That's great.
but, you know, the Titan show clearly looks like they're going for a mature level rating there as well.
Except that show doesn't really need one. For
not
sure.
Disagreeing. Yeah.
I think this doing a hard R or a mature rating with Swamp Thing is definitely something. I mean, I don't think they need to push that all the time, but for certain character traits and things in the show, I think it's definitely good that they're willing to go that far with it.
I mean, it shows that if the first two live action shows that they're talking about are both pushing for that hard R. I wonder if Young Justice will be darker than it has been in the first two seasons.
It doesn't need to be, though. The first two seasons already had kind of a darker tone for a kid's show, but it, you know, you can have dark storylines and not abuse the just the language barrier and not increase the violence. Like, they killed off characters in that show. They talked about adult relationships. They dealt with PTSD. Like, the show still touched on things that maybe not every child understood. But
yeah,
I don't think Young Justice needs to go darker. And honestly, if it did get too much darker, I don't think I'd tune in. I don't think it'd be the same show.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I wanted it to be. I was just...
Yes, you were.
Hypothesizing.
Well, everything DC is dark, so yeah.
Well, their next one that they're...
It actually stands for Dark Comics, right, exactly. Not Detective. Dark Comics,
yeah.
But the thing is that, like, their next live-action show is supposedly Stargirl, and...
That shouldn't be dark at all.
Right? Yeah. Okay. So, I'm wondering if maybe they're just gonna start with these two, and then
it's not
totally
really a good,
change.
That's not a great business move, though, considering a lot of people's criticism of DC... live action stuff is that it's been too dark lately.
Yeah. Right. So then, like, maybe, you know, maybe they should have started with Stargirl, but again, I guess they wanted some name recognition.
Who knows? Yeah, maybe knows like season is. 2, they'll change her name to Dying Stargirl.
Yeah, there you go. You know. And everything will have a sepia filter.
Imploding Stargirl.
Fantastic.
They did cast Abby Arcane too. I don't think we talked about that. I don't remember the actress's name, but she was Sophia Falcone on Gotham, and I thought she was great in that. She's not who I would have picked personally, but I mean, obviously she's the casting and I'm not against it, but
sure.
It makes me think that whoever they're going to get to voice or possibly play Alec Holland, excuse me, is going to be a bigger star, you know.
Probably. Yeah.
It's interesting.
They like to balance it out.
I'm just curious what she's going to look like with white hair.
If they
that's
even
kind of an
do
Abby
that.
Arcane thing.
Yeah.
But I guess they could just ignore it. I'd probably be a little upset if they ignored that, because that's pretty, like, that's a big part of her character. I don't know.
Anytime they ignore a hair color when the hair color has canonically been outrageous or, like, noticeably different, like,
it becomes a part of the character, right? Like, it can be a black actress, it can be, you know, whatever,
right?
You know, anything, but keep the white hair. I mean, come on,
it's fun. I mean, they've changed Catwoman's hair so many times, and at this point, I don't even care anymore, it doesn't even matter. But for Abby Arcane and, like, the other white haired superhero Storm. Like, yeah. if you change it, it's noticeable and it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't obviously affect the quality of the show, but
Small just touches like that, though, resonate with fans.
Yeah. Give the character some love.
So the only other piece of, like, superhero-type news that we have has to do with the Avengers 4, quote, reshoots. So Mark Ruffalo...
did his thing.
Doing his thing.
Thanks, the rough man.
The thing that Tom Holland always gets blamed for, but apparently hasn't actually done, but Mark Ruffalo has, is saying stuff you're not really supposed to. So these are apparently not reshoots. They're just finishing the movie. And that's not the part that's concerning. If you want to, like, you did that because you wanted to avoid as many spoilers as possible and things like that, I get it. That's risky, but I can respect that.
There's, like, contract negotiations coming up, so they want to make sure that they got those out of the way. And had, just like they did with The Walking Dead, where they had, had it looming over everybody and go, okay, so who wants to finish their run here?
My concern is what he said about those shoots, about how they could change direction at any time, that they might shoot something and then come back and completely change it. I don't know if that's the studio trying to just film a bunch of different things to confuse people, or if they really don't know how this movie is supposed to end yet.
Could be one or the other. I think they're probably safeguarding a lot of information to avoid a lot of spoilers, just like they did last time. So there's rumors that only Benedict Cumberbatch got the original script, and nobody's confirmed that. Even Benedict Cumberbatch was like, I received a script, that's all I know. Like, I didn't know if it was the script, but it's a script.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they would give... like, why would you give one actor that script, right? Unless he's just so involved in the movie that they didn't really have a choice.
I mean, I feel like Thanos would have to know, you know, he would have to know what's going on. They couldn't just not...
I don't know. Maybe he's not...
because, like, the Avengers, they're all going to play a little bit of a different role, but he's the only villain. You can't, like...
yeah, they killed off his children.
Yeah.
But we don't know how much he's in the fourth one.
Right? We don't know anything. Yeah. They, like, the only thing we do know is who's left standing
at the end of Infinity War.
And
yeah.
that's it.
And who's dust.
That's true.
What a sad opportunity.
Play that song?
Yeah.
They should have. That would have been when Peter Parker doing it. But I don't want to go dust in the wind.
Will Ferrell comes out and he sings it. Like,
you're my boy,
school.
Blue!
Oh my god. This is going off the rails. All right.
We should have really written that movie.
Yeah.
Moving on, just to kind of stick with, I guess, Disney stuff, the best selling Blu-ray.
It's been The Last Jedi.
In
so,
2018.
What I think happened is so many angry people were like, yeah, let's crap on the movie and we'll tell all of our friends not to go see it. And then those people didn't go see the movie and now they rented it, they loved it, and they're buying it. That's what I think is happening, is that it hit Netflix and people are like, you know what, those people were just being jerks.
It's a huge possibility. I'm a little surprised.
I still stand by it.
I do too, that it. Leia and Mary Poppins will be
I was
the
not
biggest
being a jerk.
Betrayal of my life.
Now let's be a little bit fair in that The Last Jedi is also, like, the one movie of 2018 people have had the most opportunity to buy.
Yeah, because
right?
it released
in December, so yeah. the Blu-ray came out like when Black Panther came
yeah,
out in theaters, right? So it's had a pretty good head start. Number one, and you know, like, Infinity War just came out like a month ago,
yeah.
right? Not even. And
you know that one's its best competition at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that Black Panther was going to be, given
no,
how
Infinity
successful
War
it was in the theater.
Infinity War is a bigger movie than Black Panther.
Well, right, but what I mean by that is, if, like, I assumed Black Panther was going to outsell The Last Jedi.
But even Black Panther hasn't had that much time. I mean, it hasn't been out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. Well, no, it came out like a week or two after Infinity War hit theaters.
I mean,
I remember,
it's still not that much time.
No, I remember specifically being kind of annoyed by that. Like, you couldn't have moved it up a week so people could rent it before seeing Infinity
yeah.
War. I'm sure they had their reasons. But I don't know. I just thought that was weird. The Last Jedi being the best-selling movie of 2018 on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe...
I mean, we didn't buy it.
No.
Did you?
Did you? Okay.
Oh, okay.
I haven't bought a Blu-ray or any kind of physical media in probably 10 years.
We don't buy that much anymore. And with Marvel, we actually have, we buy the Phase box sets. So we're waiting for this Phase box set to come out, which I don't know if that will ever happen, I guess, at this point.
Right.
It would be cool if it came in a gauntlet, since you had the briefcase with the Tesseract, you had the orb from Guardians. I guess the gauntlet's like the next thing, right?
Yeah.
Could be.
I don't know. All right. Anyway, moving on. The She-Ra trailer dropped. Teaser trailer dropped.
It looks fun. It looks like a fun show.
I watched it, but without sound because I was at work when it came out. And it looked, yeah. I mean, I really like the art style. I'd really like to see a He-Man done in the same art style. You know, I think that would be really cool. But the transformation looked cool. I mean, everything looked pretty cool. The sword is neat looking.
I like that animation style. It looks modern. It looks crisp.
The only thing is I wish it were coming out just a few weeks early because I kind of want to make that costume for my oldest niece for Halloween. And since it comes out the week after Halloween, it's not going to happen.
You can still make it.
I know. I could.
Yeah,
you're just making excuses.
She won't know what it is yet.
Exactly.
She's never seen the original.
She'll just be wearing the costume.
I don't even know if the original is available anywhere to watch.
I'm sure it is. It's things go on the internet and then they are there.
Well, that's true. Yes, there are illegitimate ways to watch it, I'm sure. but yeah, I think it looks good. I'm looking forward to watching it. I hope it creates some other, you know, Grayskull universe type stuff. I think it'd be really cool to kind of explore.
A lot of people are like, I don't even care until I see Hordak. And I'm like, you understand that Catra is going to be the main antagonist for first 5 to 10 episodes.
Probably the entire
first season. Yeah.
Is it a 13 episode season?
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty standard now, so I was curious.
Talking about She-Ra costumes, I did think it's cool. Shuri has a costume you can get at just Walmart or whatever.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
That's cool.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
And this is the first Halloween since Black Panther's come out, so you know, you're starting to see that stuff. But yeah, Shuri.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I'm really excited.
I hope I see some of those.
Yeah. Like
Scarlet this year. Maybe we'll see a few.
Oh, that'll be fun. Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I'll be sporting the Buster Props muscle suit.
Will you?
Yeah.
That's the plan anyway.
Good lord. you're doing Mr. Incredible?
No.
No.
Oh.
No. Eventually. Okay. But not for Scarlet.
You'll have to tell me later. So, we're gonna keep it secret.
Yeah. We'll keep it safe.
Yours.
All right, so we'll keep going. We'll wrap up news here in a couple of minutes because it's going a little long. But Jordan Peele is looking to reboot Candyman.
Now, if you loved the original Candyman, it was most likely because of the actor who played him and not because of the film, because it was rough in places. And Jordan Peele is incredibly talented, so I'm looking forward to this. I'm hoping the original actor has a cameo and they have an homage to him. I don't expect him to be the main guy in this. I don't expect him to bring him back like they did with Robert Englund all those times. But I do expect him to have a little homage. So that would be nice.
It would be cool if they could find some in-universe explanation for it being a continuation with a new Candyman. Like you could have, you know, maybe some type of passing of the torch would be pretty neat.
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of a demon, so there's no reason why there couldn't be multiple in this world. Or
he could regenerate in some way or something. You know, I like when
all of a sudden it's evil Doctor Who. Like, I love that.
Not like that. It's just I like when universes are allowed to continue. Like, I appreciate, like it or not, I appreciate what they try to do with Tron, right? The idea that these universes are still happening and we're just not necessarily seeing all of the stories in between.
No, I love that. You know? I've wanted to see what else is going on in the world during these big films. Like if North America has become Pan Am and we do the Hunger Games, what is going on in Australia and Europe and Asia? Like, you know, the rest of the world can't be that much better off. There's no way they're having a utopia and we're, you know, having this whole dystopian society where most of our citizens are starving to death. So
the rest of the world's just watching us. They're fine. No, sequels and prequels and reboots are very popular because people like the name recognition. It makes you feel comfortable spending
your money.
You've
already had all this time in free-ish advertising, you know, from the previous media of whatever kind. Yeah, there's something to be said for that.
So I totally get it. I just, starting over from scratch just always feels a little unfortunate. That's all.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of erase everything.
Speaking of reboots and remakes, I send you guys the article about Thundercats.
What about
about the rumor that Michael Bay is actually filming a new Thundercats movie right now under a code name and it hasn't been announced?
There's an actor that is also like rumored to be attached to it too, and it might be a Netflix show or
Netflix movie or something like that. Yeah.
Michael Bay hasn't done anything good for the world.
Since Bad Boys 2, right?
Bad Boys 2.
Yeah, the early 2000s. Boy, did
Armageddon come out? Armageddon came out before Bad Boys.
Yeah.
So, okay. That's interesting, because he's been pretty quiet recently.
But he's been wanting to do that for over 10 years now.
Ever since he ruined Transformers, he decided.
He's got to ruin another one. But it does explain why he's been so quiet, though. Because if they're trying to keep this under wraps as some type of big surprise...
I think it's because people like us sit around every single day and talk about how horrible he is. Why wouldn't he want to keep that quiet?
Can you imagine? The internet will blow up if, like, Netflix comes out and says, Thundercats, watch it now, and, like, there's nothing
other than the show. Do you remember the cartoon, like, just 6 months ago with the announcements? Like,
the internet blew up for a day.
Fanboys tore that apart.
It's not going to be a Netflix movie.
It would be more likely a Netflix...
Michael Bay wouldn't direct a TV show, I don't think.
No,
I imagine he would make, like, a three-hour movie and they would split it apart in, like, six episodes.
Or Castlevania, where it's, like, four episodes or something.
I just don't see Netflix giving him the budget he would need.
Not enough explosion budget?
Well, I mean, Bright's budget was only, like, 60 or 90 million, which, I mean, to us, of course, is a fortune, right? But when you look at a normal motion picture... 165 is on the low end of that spectrum today, you know?
Like, I don't know. Maybe he's funding some of it out of his own pocket. Maybe he has other investors, other producers. There's no way to know. The thing is, like, even though we all think it's crap, Transformers movies keep making money, so they keep throwing him projects. They keep throwing him projects.
Well,
so
Bumblebee looks like it is taking a drastically different approach.
He's not directing it, though.
That's true. He's just producing.
It's just
it.
In
fair.
His world. Yeah. So, and we don't know where it takes place. So everybody wants to go see it because of the where's and the when's and.
Well, it takes place in the 80s. I know that much.
Okay, so well before Sam Witwicky.
That's right.
Ever came into our lives.
That's true. All right. Well, anyway, we've spent a
Daredevil
little.
Release date.
Oh, okay.
Daredevil's
yeah,
releasing in October.
October, yeah. I think it was
19.
Yeah, there was a release on the Thai Netflix. Because they all really. All the Twitters released the trailer for Daredevil Season 3, which plays at the end of Iron Fist Season 2. And when they released it, they said, join us on October 19th or something along those lines. And, everybody, you know, latched onto that real quick.
That's so early.
It's awesome.
They don't have faith in Iron Fist.
Yeah, they need something to carry it through the winter.
That's an interesting concept.
Punisher, yeah.
Well, when you look at the order of only 10 episodes versus the normal 13, and only 1 month apart between releases, yeah, they have no faith in Iron Fist.
Watched 6 or 7 episodes of season 2, I know we're reviewing it next week, so we're not going to get too deep into it, but it is much better than the first season, so... Yeah.
I've heard that from everybody. We'll see. Problem is not a lot of people are willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, second chance, yeah.
Well, I mean, Finn Jones and Mike Coulter both want to do Heroes for Hire, so
please
maybe,
let that happen.
Maybe that's the goal here.
That's what I think they should do, just recycle IPs and merge shows. And
then you can add some new characters, you know, Moon Knight.
Their chemistry together in season 2 of Luke Cage was fantastic. Yeah. And if they both want to do it and Iron Fist isn't hitting the standards that people want it to hit, then just go do it.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like a no-brainer.
But... I just wonder if they're scared to do that because then they get one less show out of it because Netflix's deal with Marvel right now and Disney because they're doing their own streaming service. I know they get their adult ones, but Disney might be like, no, you're not getting any extra shows.
They do the spinoff Daughters of the Dragon and they have the exact same amount of shows.
Yeah, potentially. You know? They've got the characters, so.
Yeah.
But Disney may not let them.
That's true.
You know,
that's unfortunate.
Yeah, we don't really know the legalities of that other than if it's going to be mature rated, it goes on Netflix.
And if there's anything in the world that stifles creativity, It's copyright legality.
So yeah, we don't have to wait much more than a month for Daredevil Season 3, which is really exciting. I know I've been very much looking forward to it ever since the ending of Defenders.
I have to refresh myself a little bit on Season 2. It's been a while.
You and John with Buster Props are just waiting for those photos.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to get a big new suit or anything. You know, maybe a new cowl.
Every two episodes, season new two. Suit.
Yeah. Well, he got lots of new stuff in Season 2, so I'm hoping it slows down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, so we don't have to wait very long, which is exciting. Although he is in his vigilante suit for most of this one, which is
that is neat.
The superior suit,
or is he?
Or is it his doppelganger?
Okay, so we're gonna take this opportunity to take a small commercial break because we have sold out, mofo.
No, it's just a promo for one of our other shows. No, we'll be right back, guys.
Sold out. That was a lot of news.
It was.
That's okay, because I feel like we're not gonna talk a super long time about Time Machine.
I had a feeling. It's a slow movie. You know, the old 60s style of storytelling.
In our last one of these, we were having to really stretch it, so.
But I got some fun facts and things like that, too.
Have you picked yours yet?
Oh, right.
I have a few in the air.
If you can pick one, it'd be nice.
I'm not picking one right now, no.
Okay.
Okay, we're back, everybody.
Hey!
So, the topic for this week, if you're not aware, is what, Ray?
The 1960s Time Machine. So, I realized a little while ago that for all of us being huge cinephiles, we have gaps in our collection and our viewing history that we wanted to share with each other. So, we've been picking movies that are important to us or maybe have flown under the radar. Maybe we're taking this is an opportunity to see a new movie that has slipped by personally.
Or the opportunity to troll the other two hosts into watching something that you know is terrible but they've never seen.
Oh, so that's Ryan.
No, not necessarily.
That's what Ryan's going to do next month.
So, for those who may not know, I am a sci-fi guy. That's my thing. And
you're the sci-fi.
Well, I'm the Star Trek dude. Oh.
I feel like the sci-fi guy is your knockoff.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I'm pretty sure that handle is taken. I think I follow that person.
It's the Hydrox. Yep.
But anyway, Hydrox was first.
And you're Oreo. That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Well, you killed Hydrox.
She said that, but yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Anyway, so I wanted to go with a movie that I've been watching most of my life that kind of helped form my opinion of science fiction and that whole genre, which is the H.G. Wells' The Time Machine from 1960. It's a adaptation on H.G. Wells' novella, The Time Machine. It's pretty close. It's certainly not exact. There's like an epilogue in the novella that's clearly not in the movie, and things like that. But it's pretty close, considering. That's what we're going to be talking about. There have been at least two other versions of The Time Machine in 2002. With Guy Pearce, and then in 1978, which I've never seen.
There was also an adaptation in 1944 for the BBC.
Oh.
The director, George Pal, mm-hmm. is that his name? He wanted to do a sequel, and he died before it happened, so somebody else picked it up and made a TV movie sequel to it.
So it's a pseudo-sequel because it's also a documentary.
Yeah.
There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Michael J. Fox actually shows up in it, which is kind of cool. And a few of the actors from the original, Rod Taylor and Alan Young, are both in it, along with some others.
Yeah. So it's got kind of a rich history to it.
So just a couple of small, like, little fun facts. It had a really small budget for the time, about $750,000.
No.
But it ended up pulling in almost $5.7 million worldwide, which is pretty solid.
Well, that's a huge return.
Yeah. 3.5 domestically. So it did a pretty good job, especially, you know, for that time period, which is pretty cool. It did win an Academy Award for Best Effects in 1961, which is somewhat surprising when you watch some of those special effects and you think about how they held up over the years. But it was nominated for a Hugo Award, but it did not win the Hugo Award. But it was nominated, which is kind of neat. And a lot of the props are actually reused from the film Forbidden Planet, which is a older sci-fi film from the 50s that actually starred Leslie Nielsen. Bonus fact right there.
When he was a serious actor and not the Naked Gun airplane guy.
That's right.
Seriously, like, he had a whole career before that, and people don't know.
He did, yeah.
Or they don't care.
Or they don't care, yes. All right, so the time machine. Quick synopsis. Guy, it's December 31st, 1899. Guy builds a time machine. His friends don't believe him. He goes forward in time, sees all the horrors and destruction of humanity. And
so he continues to go forward until it's the year 802,733 or something like that.
701. I had to write it down. I was
trying to memorize it.
It's been parodied a bunch of times. You know, mm-hmm. Futurama's parodied it. Big Bang Theory had a whole episode about the time machine prop and things like that. So, guys, what did you think? Any thoughts? It's okay. You didn't have to like it.
You hadn't seen it before this?
I hadn't, no. I had only seen the Guy Pearce version in 2002.
Have you seen that one?
No.
Okay, just curious.
It was well made. I think I'm just, because of my age, a spoiled consumer of media that I felt like I had ADHD watching it because it was very slow and a lot of movies were back then from what I understand. And so it's just what cinema has become mm-hmm. now that has kind of spoiled me to a movie that has such a slow pace. But it was very well made. I can definitely appreciate the amount of work that went into it. The acting was really better than I thought it would be. So I was pleasantly surprised overall. Will I watch it again? Probably not. But it's cool that I have watched it now.
Ray?
I found the main character spoiled and unrelatable. I thought he was misogynistic and needing to be the hero.
They were almost all misogynistic, though.
Other than the redheaded dude, they were pretty much all misogynistic. But
I think that was a sign of the times.
He seemed to get a huge boner off of rescuing these Eloi. I'm sorry, they're useless people. They should die. Like,
how do they live this long? Right? That's what I want to know.
The Morlocks are doing...
Right, but it took like half their population... In that one go.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get a good look at that.
They may be like cannibal monsters, but they are industrious. They are clearly really good ranchers.
Like, a superior race.
Clearly.
Okay, that's... Clearly. Like, we're going down a bad path.
They were the heroes in this whole movie.
H.G. Wells came from the working class. He wrote this knowing that the working class works underground. Yes. They are the bakers. They are the
coal miners.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, there was clearly a point being made when he gets to the future.
Yes.
Right.
So I didn't find our hero relatable because he feels the need to be the white knight and rescue. It's one thing to rescue the one Eloi from drowning. I mean, I would have done that too. I would have tried to help this person. I have tried to rescue someone from drowning before. I get that the Eloi are useless people because they have no curiosity and no willingness to go outside of their comfort zone. You know, they don't care where they get their food. They don't care. They just know they can't go out at night. So I get that they're a useless race, but I don't see why he felt the need to go back. Just because his friends didn't believe him?
No, like, that's not why he goes back.
It seemed like he fell in love with this woman that just 5 seconds ago he called a child. Like, oh, you are a child. Like, that's disgusting.
It's weird.
You are disgusting, sir.
It's super weird.
She is mentally about a 6-year-old and you fell in love with her? You are gross.
It's that part is very weird. I think the point that
bring on the Guy Pearce movie.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Well, so the crux of the
machine itself was really cool.
Would it have changed anything if Adrian Brody was?
No, because he's usually a really crappy kind of person. Like In real life, he's not a predator. He's not a monster. He's not a racist. He's just a douchebag. Like,
so, I mean, the idea is that George feels out of his own time. He doesn't feel like he fits in. He's not supposed to have any kind of love interest where he is. No family, no real attachments. His friends are even somewhat distanced from him, except for Alan's character. For some reason, the actor's name is stuck in my head.
Philby.
Thank you.
Who's the only actual good person, pretty much, in the whole movie.
He's a wonderful person.
The older woman.
Yeah, I guess.
And Mrs. Watchett.
Watchett, thank you. Yeah, she's...
What a dumb last name. Like, if that wasn't on the damn
Her
nose.
Sister was Who's It?
No, well, it's not. I don't think that's... It's the clocks everywhere. That's the joke. but the point is
her first name is Timepiece. Right. Yeah, sorry.
He wants to leave that time period. And I think in his perspective, he just doesn't fit in where he is.
I like the beginning of the movie. And it's because I like the motivation that he wants to live in a world without war.
Yes.
That he's hoping that one day humans are good enough to not fight each other.
See, I got more that he was just interested in like where tech would be at a certain point, not that, but
he didn't like that the technology was always being used just to make the next best weapon.
Yeah,
right.
I mean,
he wanted technology to advance to the point. Like
he wanted to show up to Star Trek, Starfleet.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So when he shows up and first sees the Eloi, he thinks that we've reached this utopia where machines just take care of everything and we can just do whatever we want.
That's completely Aryan, everyone.
Well, yes, but the point.
None of us would be there.
No.
Nope.
Not at all. But the point
been, like,
is,
Sparta,
right.
Like, kicked us off the edge because we don't have blonde enough hair.
The Morlocks are still the bad guys, though, because they're essentially cannibals who are slaughtering these people.
They're not cannibals because they're not human.
I mean.
Maybe humans are like cows to them. Are we cannibals?
Okay, let's put it this way then. It would be like if we were eating chimps.
Like, the. No,
they do in some places.
Yeah.
And I think that's weird, don't you?
They're weird, but not cannibals.
Like, the humans evolved. They evolved into two completely different forms. And we lost our intelligence in both.
Mm-hmm.
We lost our humanity, for lack of a better word, our kindness. And I think that is... You know, the problem, I don't think that was a good future. I don't think he should have destroyed the Morlocks. I don't think he should have gone back. I think maybe he should have, you know, stuck around at a different point and tried to make the world better where he is. Instead of just trying to convince these 3-4 guys that he was capable, I think...
Yeah, that unfortunately would break the time travel because that's why Philby keeps the house and makes the monument to him and things like that because he expects him to come back at some point.
Yes.
And he can't come back or none of that would have been that way. And so it would have changed his time travel to begin with and that whole side story that goes on there with, you know, the sun and everything. I mean, this is an old story. Right, that's part of the narrative is that this is an old concept, and he, you know, the idea is he's saving the more human creatures compared to the monsters down below is the idea, right?
Yeah.
So it's very kind of
he's
on the nose.
He's choosing the lesser race because they're prettier, right? Like,
I mean, to an extent,
he likes children. They're pretty children.
They're also peaceful, whereas the Morlocks are not. He doesn't
until
like.
He turns them violent.
Keep in mind, he doesn't.
Yeah, that one guy like starts hitting him for the very first time.
So now, who do you think he's
going to
hit next, Derek? In the 1960s,
obviously George. no, but my point is that.
I do like that the character's name is H. George Wells.
Yes.
That was cool.
Well, and if you look on the time machine,
it says property
we all saw
of
it, Derek. We all saw
Easter
it.
Eggs.
Anyway. The point that I'm trying to make, though, is that he doesn't like violence and war and that type of thing. And he sees the Morlocks as being the violent species here, the violent race, whatever you want to call them. And he doesn't like that, and he wants to put an end to that. They also stole his time machine, and that ticked him off quite a bit, too. So, you know, at the end of the day, maybe if they hadn't taken his time machine, he would have gone home, and that would have been the end of it. You know, because he went to go get the time machine, he couldn't get it back, and that's how he ends up with.
Yeah, he
Mina
did
more.
End up hating the Eloi.
You know, but then they're kind of his savior, so to speak, and he's saving them and things of that nature. So, you know, But there's a lot more to the movie that we're kind of skipping over, right? So you have...
all the stuff in the middle that we didn't talk about. That's how I feel like the time machine goes. Like, we just talk... Like, even H.G. Wells, when he writes about the middle stuff very little, and the important part is the Eloy and the Morlocks, you know?
So I couldn't help, the whole time I was watching this movie, because the movie is very dialogue heavy.
Yes. It is.
I couldn't help, I want Quentin Tarantino to remake this movie, but not,
okay,
like, with the racial undertones and things like that that he likes to throw into his movies, and no feet. Like, he's just does dialogue really well in an interesting way.
Yeah.
And I feel like some of the scenes that were slow for me would have been a lot better with a modern day director that knows more about dialogue framing, yeah, and
I would much rather have Samuel L. Jackson explain to me what the three dimensions are. Right?
Yeah.
You don't like the overweight dude.
You go up, motherfucker! Then you go down!
Oh, God. But it's an interesting point, though, when you think about the time of the film, where, like, almost the entire first half of the movie just takes place at the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I do have a question.
That is smart, because it's saved on all of the sets.
Yeah, and money was a big factor here.
And that time machine is a fantastic looking prop. It looked cool. Like,
there's so
I'm not saying it was functional.
Yes, it did, but I kind of wonder why somebody that's an inventor would just like add a little crystal to the top of the like handle, or like make a door that just nicely, you know.
And then never inventor, use it again.
Yeah, every inventor that's ever been portrayed in a movie has, like, Doc Brown, right? Like, shit's just thrown together, and we pray to God it holds together.
No, hang on.
This is very refined.
Doc picked the DeLorean because if you're going to travel through time, you should do it in style.
Right, and the stainless steel chassis helps with a lot of things. But I mean, the back of it, where you see the tech, is all looks cobbled together.
You're right, but there's no diamonds. I always took the diamond or the crystal or whatever it is as being part of the mechanical structure of it.
On the end of the handle?
I don't know.
It's like having an eight-ball shift knob. Right? I mean, that's basically what it is.
I think you're exaggerating a little bit. I think that we don't...
Well, for fun,
I know, but we don't really know...
Speculating.
We don't really know how it functions at all. It's got that giant, you know, plate behind it that spins and little lights that light up and stuff like that.
It was very pretty. And clearly that guy spent years learning how to upholster velvet.
Right? And, yeah.
I think he just bought a chair.
Damn it, Darren.
He probably did. But he also bought an eight-ball shift knob, so...
Anyway, I had a question for you guys.
Sure.
How did you feel about the movie essentially beginning with him showing up having done most of the adventure already?
It did get me curious. I wanted to know exactly where he was going with this. But that, from what I've read on my homework, it's a pretty faithful part of the book as well, so, or the novella.
But from like a storytelling standpoint,
I mean, it's tough because, again, it's I've seen movies where they do that similar thing since then, so it wasn't like a brand new concept to me. Obviously in the 60s probably was, but it's cool. I appreciate it when it's done well, and it was done well. So
see, I actually don't like it.
Oh, really?
Because it kills the suspense.
So this whole thing was a setup so that talk about it.
No, I assumed you guys wouldn't like it either.
Really?
It kills the suspense of the film.
Because I disagree.
Everything that happens before he comes back, you know he's going to make it.
Yeah, but I assumed from the beginning that he wasn't in any danger.
But you didn't know what was going to happen to him. You didn't know if he was going to get stuck in some other time, or when the Morlocks steal the time machine, you don't know how he's going to get it back.
And, right.
You know, there's all these different things that could happen. If you don't know that he makes it back, it does enhance the suspense.
No? I guess. I think my stupid brain works in the way that, like, okay, at the beginning he is all messed up. He's got cuts and ripped clothing and blood in places, and he's very dirty. Let's see if that's consistent with how his injuries are at the end of the movie. So that's how terrible I am. Okay. I just want to look for
that's
consistency.
Where I was too, to be honest with you. And because Dave Grohl in chat likes us nitpicking, I do have a nitpicky time travel thing.
Well, I mean, that's what we're here for.
Oh, please.
So
excuse me.
At the end, when he comes back,
And you're, he like, moves.
Shouting.
I was wondering if they would have the time machine show up in his garage or whatever that is again. Right? They didn't, so I was happy about that.
Yeah.
But clearly, when you see him, his time machine taken by the Morlocks or whatever, it's taken up a hill and into a building. Well, when it comes back, it's sitting flat on flat ground. There's no hill or nothing like that. So,
because the hill wasn't there.
Okay, but the time machine would have still stayed that high. It would have fallen to the ground.
Yeah, it would have fallen to the ground.
But it...
Did you... See, you don't watch Futurama, so you haven't seen this in action. But no, the hill wasn't there 800,000 years earlier, so it just would have dropped a few feet, whatever that was.
Right, but he didn't... There was no sign of impact. There was nothing showing that. I don't know.
Or you know, maybe it was a situation where his house was higher up. And it had lowered over time.
Okay, that's another thing I had a problem with was, wow, these volcanoes and lava are going, you know, everything's going off. It's really lucky that this wall just built up directly next to him and never took over.
So that's not what happens. Because he never stops in there.
I know he never stops in there, but it clearly shows...
Well, that's just 60 special effects. But the idea is that it's all there. If he were to stop, he dies. Like, he's just...
I get that this is the idea, but I can only go off of what is actually shown in the movie.
Okay.
And it's a very weird, like, logic jump that all this stuff would happen around him. Or, like, all the bombs and stuff going off. He's seeing destruction, like, 15 feet away, buildings collapsing. And it's still green grass, beautiful weather, and his time machine's just sitting there completely unhurt in this
Well, because as long as he keeps moving...
But no, this was when he was off.
Oh, you mean during the bombing when Yeah, that's the silly part.
Yeah, I was like, okay, he's just really lucky with where he parked his time machine, I guess. Oh, yeah,
the whole city just got nuked, and he's just kind of rolling around in the yard. The grass is still
green, you know? The time machine untouched, no lava,
that part you're totally right about. That you're absolutely right about. But anything that happens while he's moving through time doesn't affect him. Or the machine.
Okay. Well, I think they touch
on that in the 2002 Jeremy Irons jumps into the time machine and Guy Pearce kicks him out and he watches his body decay as he's going forward, and that's kind of cool to watch.
Yeah.
For the record, I know you don't like it, but that 2002 remake was directed by the great-great-grandson of H.G. Wells.
Which is really cool.
Like, right? That's really fun. And Alan Young does appear in that, so does H.G. Wells in a little picture.
Well, look, the main reason that I don't like the 2002 film is the motivation for the time machine.
Yes, because you're cold inside and don't believe in love.
That
is actually true about Derek, fun fact.
In the 1960 version, as well as the book, he creates a time machine out of scientific curiosity because he is an inventor. And in the 2002 film, they made it that his wife dies and he wants to save her. And the problem is that the way time travel is used in these movies, he can't do that.
No, we get to watch her die multiple times.
And so it changes the entire point of the film. The point of the film now is his regret of not being able to save his wife instead of his wish to find humanity's peak of civilization. That he is an inventor and he built this to see if it could be done, to prove that it was possible. It changes the character completely for me. And yeah, the special effects are much better and the detail is better because it's a modern film, but that's not what's important.
I'm not judging the film on the special effects. There were movies that came before it that did it much better, and there are movies that have come after that have done it much worse. So I'm not judging.
Stop motion stuff was actually pretty good. I thought like the when the Morlock or whatever they're called was like
decaying
and then come back. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then you had also the like lava scene where it's clearly like Hot Wheels they threw into red water.
Oatmeal.
Okay.
Actually, it's oatmeal. Yeah. No, you're right about that stuff. One quick thing about the time, the stop motion. A lot of the stuff, the scenery and things like that, the flowers, were actually paintings were shot picture by picture.
I feel like I could kind of tell. I don't know. It looked very flat. You could tell, but it's still an interesting, clever way of doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some really bad matte painting stuff in there, but again, we saw that bad matte painting stuff in the 90s still, you know?
One of the things I love about movies is trying to pick apart practical effects. Like, how did they actually accomplish that? In this movie, it's not as hard in older movies a lot of the time, so I didn't get, you know, the thrill of figuring it out with this one, but it was interesting to see how things were done, because I don't want to watch a lot of movies from that era, so...
Yeah. And I mean, there's not a whole lot for them to do. Most of it is, like you were saying, dialogue. It's conversation, right? And I mean, the Morlocks, I guess, for 1960 looked fine.
I actually liked him. I thought he was pretty good. Pretty impressive.
The lights in the eyes.
That was cool. I always liked that.
Well done.
And the fight scenes, actually, especially if you compare it to what Star Trek fight scenes were like just a few years later, the fight scenes in this movie are actually pretty good.
The scene with the Warlock on fire was probably the scene I was most impressed with, because every time he like ran off camera, I was like, okay, the fire's done. And then he run back into frame and do it some more, and then he's like, okay, he's done now. Nope, then he's coming back out for a third pass. I'm like, that dude did not get paid enough.
Like, because that was a latex suit, I imagine, with a lot of,
like, a fire suit and just the mask. God, if you look at it, like, it's clearly, like, clothing. Probably fireproof clothing, but the mask is still there, and I mean, I don't want to wear a latex mask without fire.
I actually thought a lot of that was really well done. And the time machine has kind of become an iconic prop, you know, that is pretty easy to pick out. There's not really anything else that looks like it, which I've always appreciated, that it's very different. You know, most time machines that you see in movies and TV shows and stuff move, like the DeLorean, right? But this one doesn't. It straight up doesn't move. You're stuck wherever it is.
I love that aspect of it. I love that there was a caveat to his travel, because
I did think that was an interesting mechanic. Not something I'd ever really thought about.
It keeps the story interesting, in my opinion. And maybe it's because H.G. Wells, like, kind of invented our modern concept of what a time machine actually is, and other stories developed that and added the whole moving through space also, but I just thought it was a neat story plot.
I like it because, you know, it does force him to work around those factors, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when the bombs go off, he can't go away from them. Yeah. He just has to go past them. And, you know, that mountain could maybe never, you know, decay enough for him to get out, or erode enough for him to get out.
That would have made for a boring film.
Of course. It's a cool idea. I always liked that. I always thought it was cool. The little model, I always wish that somebody made that, like, in production, so I could buy one.
Yeah, I would definitely buy one.
I mean, by hand, yeah. But, like, I mean, like, NECA or somebody, you know, Eagle Moss, somebody out there make a model that I can buy for, you know, 20, 30, 40 bucks, something like 50 bucks, you know.
Yeah, I'd buy that.
Like the DeLoreans, that are pretty readily available.
Yeah. I can see how it's iconic.
Not quite as iconic in a pop culture sense.
Right. No.
Important, but not iconic.
I feel like the time machine is not, like, the movie is not iconic, but the entire story is, and the history and how it's been adapted. Like, we've talked about the novella and the 1960s and the 2002 movie, and I think that all of them together are fairly iconic. And as sci-fi and fantasy fans, we can definitely see the roots that this whole story has helped create our modern-day concept of sci-fi. So I can definitely appreciate what happened with it, where it's coming from. I just, at some point, the hero becomes unlikable to me.
Yeah, and there was, the characters were not written in a way that was, I didn't identify with any of them, other than Philby, I guess, because everybody wants to be the nicer guy, and he was the only one that seemed like he was even remotely likable.
Well, because he seemed normal, because the other three guys are these super... But at the same time, like,
he's not just normal, he wants to believe his friend, he wants to support his efforts and things like that. He just, like...
Throughout time, like, a lifetime.
So much so that even his son creates a memorial for that friendship.
That's how important about the guy.
Yeah. That's how important that was. And I like that.
How many of us would be okay with that? Like, if all of a sudden, let's say Derek turns 45 and he decorates our house in nothing but clocks and timepieces, like, I think Ryan and I would both think that you were bonkers.
An inventor.
I would ask if he has a DeLorean in the garage. Oh, man. Or a giant amp anywhere.
I can dream.
A giant amp and speaker.
I can dream.
So that's where we're going. He's just done and daydreaming.
I just want a DeLorean. Anyway, the movie is important for classic science fiction. It was at an era of when sci-fi was still relatively new. Of course, the 50s were really when things took off with movies like The Forbidden Planet and Lost in Space, the TV show. Exactly. Yeah, there was some big stuff. And the 60s is where things really started to, you know, become colorized. And, you know, Star Trek came out of this a few years later, just six years later. And, you know, this was old storytelling, old movie style. Mm-hmm. But it does some interesting stuff. I think it holds up pretty well compared to other movies from that time. I think a movie like Forbidden Planet, which is also one of my favorite classic sci-fi films, doesn't hold up quite as well. Now it's about 5 years older, six mm-hmm. years older. So it's all black and white, you know, whereas this is colorized and all that.
Still a cheaper option. Like, obviously, people were using color as early as the 1930s.
Well, right.
So black and white is still, even today, a cheaper option to go with. Like, that's why a lot of indie directors for their first or second film will do black and white films.
Now, for Rod Taylor, who played George, did anybody else think he looked like a combination of Bill Pullman and Robin Williams?
No.
No, was that just me?
Yeah, I didn't.
No? Okay.
Sorry. He did look abnormally handsome compared to his friends. Like, his friends, even Philby, looked like they had... Well, the other three guys looked like they had at least 20 years on him, and then Philby looked like he was 7 or 8 years... Philby kind of reminded me of Chief O'Brien, too.
Oh, yeah.
I kept thinking it was, like, related to Colm Meaney.
That's my headcanon now.
Side note.
That is a early ancestor of Chief O'Brien.
But anyway, like, I just can't imagine any time of... any period of time where 4 or 5 gentlemen that range in age... so much get together on like a weekly basis for dinner
and drink wine.
Yeah,
well, there wasn't much else to do.
Well, one guy was an alcoholic, like, he really?
And I thought that was gonna be relevant. Like, I thought it was gonna be relevant because they really made a point to show this guy immediately said he always appreciated their wine or whatever.
Never,
and and it never came
around. Like, those three guys had nothing characteristic about them. So that guy's an alcoholic, that guy's always smoking a cigar, and that guy's playing with his monocle and saying, like, so that was
sounds about right. 60s character development.
They were just there to doubt, and Philby was there to be the friend, is really what it was. Because the other three just kind of abandon him, and Philby stays behind. For like, that scene takes a little too long for George to realize that Philby's still there.
That was the most relevant part of it. Like, those three guys are the people in our Congress right now. They see something with their own eyes and they're like, nope, didn't happen. Like, that is the most relevant thing about the movie.
Derek does not want to get political now. So.
That was just it. I'm just saying those guys are relatable because it's what we see all the time.
There are a couple of interesting things that we haven't touched on yet. There's the atomic wars of the mid-1960s, which of course were in the future from when the movie was made. Which, you know, was kind of telling of the time, right? It was the heights of the Cold War and the Red Scare and those sorts of things. So that was kind of intense.
I loved the mannequin aspect. I thought it was a little overused.
I liked the mannequin too. I thought it was an interesting way of showing time progressing. Although there were some weird inconsistencies with the speed.
Yeah.
Like, you could see it undress and get dressed, but this was like as the sun had passed like 4 times and they just leave this mannequin naked for a week. You know? Come on. Like, there was some weird inconsistencies.
He just keeps moving the lever when he's not straight.
Yeah. That's going to look really weird if he keeps going back and forth with the lever like that.
He did say that it was his ageless friend.
See, that's the thing. Maybe that's why, like, the Aloy stuff with,
Eloy, not Aloy.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're getting Horizon Zero Dawn right now.
Aloy, right. Sorry, my bad. The,
Eloy.
I'm all screwed up now. The Eloy stuff.
We did it. We broke Derek.
The Eloy stuff wasn't as creepy because I thought the mannequin part was weird.
No.
He's like, he's a lonely guy.
Yeah, guys love sex dolls now. It's fine.
I guarantee you that guy had one.
It's
that
okay. Was the
one. He would have invented one.
It is legal to love sex dolls. It's never legal to love children. Like,
Now, there is, when he goes to the future in 1966, in the window is a TV, and it says the first tubeless television. And it actually looks a lot like
the
what
first
flat
tubeless
screens, you know, turned out to be, which is kind of neat for 1960. Now, there is something that a lot of people have gripes about in the sci-fi community, and that's that there seems to be no point where we meet extraterrestrial life in those 800,000 years. Now, I don't think there's enough shown.
Yeah, they skip through like 600,000 years.
Yeah.
In like 5 minutes. Okay. Or less, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have a problem with that.
Okay. I just wondered maybe if I was just making.
I mean,
an
we can come up with some headcanon where they create
Murlocs or whatever. Yeah. They look like they could be half aliens. Yeah. So you know, who knows?
So last fun bit of trivia: if you're an X-Men fan at all, the Morlocks are a subset of mutants in the X-Men that are non-human passing, so they live in the sewers. And they were named after, obviously, the Time Machine. And their leader, Caliban, was named after a deformed character in the play The Tempest by Shakespeare. So just for the entire story of the Morlocks in the X-Men, it's taken from sci-fi and fantasy and classical literature. So it's pretty cool.
Nice, nice.
Pretty cool homage.
So we're kind of at our hour mark. Is there anything else you guys want to note about the film?
No, I got to harangue it enough.
It's hurtful. Ryan?
Nope, I feel good about the amount of haranguing I did. All
right, yeah, cool. Right? I will say, so I know, Ryan, you watched it on DVD. We watched the Blu-ray. It was like my first time watching it on Blu-ray, and the restoration was actually really good.
It was nice. I noted that right at the beginning. The color was great.
Whoever was responsible for doing the restoration did a good job.
I did have something else. I learned today that even in 1899, people are assholes on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, it was like middle of the day, and they're driving by honking, and I was like, wait, is this supposed to be midnight?
What? Well, look at it this way, okay? They had less to do back then, all right? So I'm going to cut them a little slack.
Well, they could obviously be inventing time machines, so clearly. Or making sex dolls, clearly. Which we know he did.
Now you could extrapolate a little bit and say that he went back to the future, not just of course to with the Eloi, but also to keep the time machine out of anybody's hands who would then turn it over to the military like his friends wanted him to do.
Yeah,
and that would have had pretty catastrophic ramifications. Mm-hmm. So you could argue that was his thing. Now in the book, he doesn't go back to the Eloi.
Yeah,
the Eloi. Damn it, he basically goes to the end of the Earth.
Yeah.
And there's like these giant bug-like creatures and stuff like that.
Crabs fighting giant butterflies.
Yeah. So, so I like that. I like the idea that he just kind of wants to see the end. And that gave us absolutely one of my favorite episodes of Futurama of all time.
Yes.
Where the professor creates the forwards time machine and they can't go backwards. They keep looping around. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful episode. Do you remember the name of that one at all? I can't remember the name of it. Okay.
But in the final season and one of the best ever.
But okay. Well, that's it then. Ryan will be picking our next Fill Our Holes retro review.
I'm going to tell you that Derek and Rachel both picked... Well, Derek floundered a little bit on his. He had a different movie picked, but he's like, oh, guys, but it's not relevant enough to cinema, so we have to pick something else. I'm not floundering. I'm going to pick a movie that I like that you guys haven't seen.
But you haven't picked it yet, so it sounds like you're
still hedging. I have several in mind that I'm going to throw out to you guys at some point.
Well, we're
going to
do this every month, so every 3 months it'll be your turn.
I get to troll you guys, or not. But, yeah.
So you don't want to say what it is yet.
I mean, I've got several. I need to find out if
you've
seen it or not.
I made you watch a good film, so, like,
come
on.
I think, if two-thirds of our picks are good films, then,
Are you saying that mine was good?
No, I'm saying that mine might be good.
But you're saying you're trolling us.
I didn't say I'd troll you. I said maybe I'd troll you. Maybe I'm trolling you by saying I'm going to troll you.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Join us next week when we review season 2 of Iron Fist.
Yes.
And yeah.
We'll talk news.
It'll be great.
Thanks to the people in the chat.
Yes.
Yeah,
thank
we
you
had
very
a
much.
Really good conversation this evening. Thank you to Midnight Pearl, Doc Rev, and DGroll83.
And don't forget, guys, that if you join our Patreon, patreon.com/heroespodcasts, you can get exclusive access to our patron lounge on Slack, where all of the hosts on the HPN are there to just talk whatever. You don't have to talk about the shows. You can talk about whatever pop culture type stuff you want, as long as you're being cool and not being a jerk. So we really want to get more people in there to have some conversation going, because it's a little quiet at the moment.
You can also request episode topics for any of the podcasts, especially this one, considering how broad we are compared to some of the others. But we all pay attention to that. So
yeah, so please check that out. Ryan is at Buster Props.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Instagram, Facebook,
buy his Shazam stuff.
Yeah, or really any of it. Yeah, I'm not too picky, but yeah, sure. Shazam stuff is cool too.
It is.
Right.
I'm at Siren Ray. I spell it like the X-Men, S-I-R-Y-N, on all the social media, the main three, and plus Patreon. So do your thing. Follow me, too. That's fine if you don't. I don't really care.
And I am the Star Trek Dude. I also co-host Red Shirts and Runabouts, which is our Star Trek podcast on Fridays. So please go ahead and check that out. You can find us at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitch. You can chat with us live Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central on Twitch, just like everybody did here tonight. We really appreciate that. We'll catch you guys next time.
Bye, guys.